Next on Gospel of Life, an interview with one of the pro-life movement's greatest allies in the U.S. Senate. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. Janet Morana, our Associate Director, and I are joined today by a very special guest, Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas, who is joining us on the telephone. Senator Brownback is really one of our strongest friends and allies in the United States Senate, really in the United States government, period. And whether it's questions of our deeply held values and convictions about life and marriage, or about global concerns for human rights, helping people in Africa or in war-torn parts of the world, wherever human life, human rights, and human dignity are in peril, you will find the voice of this leader, this Christian leader and disciple of the Lord Jesus, and a great public servant. And we're honored to have him with us today, Senator Sam Brownback. Welcome to our program.
Thank you very much, Reverend Pavone. Appreciate that greatly. And Janet, and you're overly kind with your introduction. I've just been quite blessed to be able to work on a number of topics. And unfortunately, there's no shortage of topics to work on, both in the United States and around the world, as we really try to carry this message forward about the dignity and the beauty of every person at every stage and every place. And the good news is we're fighting this fight. Bad news is we got a lot of fights to fight.
Isn't that true?
Well, you know, Senator, can you just tell our viewers a little bit about yourself, your family, a little bit of your background?
I'd be happy to. I was born and raised on a farm in eastern Kansas, pretty typical small farm, cattle and hogs, wheat, corn, soybeans, milo, and it was a wonderful place to be raised, one of four. Went to K-State, KU, majored in agriculture and law, was out practicing law, taught agricultural law, then was Secretary of Agriculture, married with five children, been in Congress, went in 94 in the Revolution, went to the Senate in 1996, been there since that period of time. My Lord saved me when I was a teenager, and he has been remaking me ever since. One of the great events that happened to me was I got cancer in 1995. Melanoma is relatively a simple cancer to deal with, so we caught it early. But what it really did to me and for me was it just sunk my faith in. It made me look to the end of life and realize that life here does end. Mm-hmm. And that I needed to operate with a different perspective, that I wasn't just climbing a little hill here on earth, that we need to look to the heavens. And it just made my faith real, and it's been a beautiful thing for me, and I've got a wonderful wife and family, and I am the most blessed man I know on earth.
Well, Senator, many people have impacted your life along the way, and I know that Mother Teresa of Calcutta was somebody that you greatly admired. What influence did she have on your life and on your thinking about these public policy issues?
She had a huge influence on me. I would really study her words, because she had these pithy, well-turned phrases that had beautiful theology and practical application of them. She would say things like, "Well, I pray that my love for the poor never gets in the way of my love for the Lord." And, you know, I thought at first, well, wait a minute, we should love the poor. Well, yes, but you love the poor by loving the Lord and then Him expressing that through you. And she would I thought, an amazing person. And I got a chance to meet her about 9 months before she died, where we presented her a Congressional Gold Medal by the U.S. Congress. And she was willing to travel all the way from India to the United States then, ill, weakened, to receive it, and I really thought that was well, for me, it was just an amazing thing that she even did that, and it very much touched my life.
Senator, I'd like to talk to you about, of course, another person that has strongly influenced all of us, President Ronald Reagan. And as you know, it's somewhat rare that a sitting president of the United States would submit a policy essay to an intellectual journal, but he did so in 1983, and the subject was abortion. He also made a special declaration 5 years after that concerning the personhood of every human being from conception to natural death. You yourself, Senator Brownback, wrote an article in 2004 that was published in the Human Life Review, and it was in reference to President Reagan's essay, which was called Abortion and the Conscience of the Nation. My question to you is, what is your message to the people of America today about the topic of abortion?
Well, first, Reagan was amazing in how supportive of abortion this nation was at the time that he published that piece. We are now a pro-life nation, but that's after 20 years later of really people, pro-life activists, really pushing and trying to talk with America about that these are children. What I think we need to do at this point in time, and what I wrote in that article, is that we need to put practice underneath our belief now. We are a pro-life nation. We do believe in life. We have now seen the impacts of abortion in this country, not just the lack of the loss of life, which has been over 40 million, but we're seeing what it's done to women, and we're seeing what it's done to families, and we're seeing what it has done to the overall society and the demographics in society. If you want to look at it even from a kind of a utilitarian, crass perspective that way. And what I want to call us to do is let's pull that conscience back into us, and let's act on this, and let's do what's right, and let's have every child here that is conceived. And if people don't want that child, let's develop the networks of people that will adopt those children. And there are many, many out there who will adopt. Or if you even have a frozen embryo, there are many people out there who cannot conceive and who want to adopt that frozen embryo. Let's put feet under our belief now, and let's put laws to respect and to maintain all human life, and let's do it now.
You, of course, have been a great ally and encouragement to us in what you've done in the United States Senate on issues like abortion. And I'd like to spend a few moments discussing here some of the special hearings that you spearheaded in a number of the committees that subcommittees that you have headed up. For example, in March of 2004, in the Senate Commerce Science Subcommittee, you had a hearing on examining the impact of abortion on women. Let's talk a little bit about that. What was your goal in calling a hearing like that?
Well, it was to put the scientific data underneath the clear idea and thought I had heard from a number of women who have had abortions that said this hurt them, and that in every abortion, like people have been saying for years, there are at least two victims. There's one dead and one wounded, and I think there are actually many more victims that are involved, but the wounded one is the woman that's involved in an abortion. And I had heard from a number of different female activists about the impact, the negative impact of abortion on them. And we had new scientific data that was coming out. And this issue hadn't been examined in public hearings for many years at the federal level. And so we brought forward some of the lead scientists in the country, female scientists who had been studying this issue, and were citing all of the problems that women face when they go through an abortion. And they're being told, women are, that, well, just give us the information, we can decide. So we wanted to put forward more of the health and the psychological health or impact on the psychological health or lack of health psychologically on the woman that takes place in abortion. And that's what we heard at that hearing. And it was condemning testimony. And then the other side that is saying there's no impact on women were there to testify as well, and yet all the data they cited was well over 20 years old and was not fresh, and they really don't even want to know that abortion impacts women.
You know, Senator, we were very encouraged, the Women of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, because we had just established the campaign in January 2003, and just less, you know, a year later, you had that hearing, and I can tell you from the women that I, you know, speak to all the time, they were so encouraged to see that someone was finally listening to them, because that's what we feel we have to do with the campaign. We have to stand out on those streets and give their testimonies, I regret my abortion, because the media won't cover it, because no one is paying attention to the impact on them. So we saw that as a hopeful sign that you had that hearing.
Well, it was because of my meetings with them and some of the books that have been written. And I tell you, women that have had abortions and will come forward and talk about the impact on them are powerful, powerful testifiers. When I was in South Dakota for the banning of abortion referendum, it didn't pass, but I'm hopeful a variation of it can pass in the future. The most effective people on the telephone lines, working the phone lines in South Dakota, were women who had had abortions, who had traveled from all over the country to South Dakota to talk with other people about what happens. And they would get people on the line who were against banning abortion in South Dakota and then tell them, here's what the impact of the abortion was on me. And they would flip them three-fourths of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful testimony.
It certainly is. Another one of the committee hearings that you held was in June of 2005, the Senate Judiciary Constitution Subcommittee. It was a hearing on the consequences of Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. What did that hearing reveal?
Well, it revealed two things. We had both Roe and Doe there, Sandra Cano and Norma McCorvey, there to testify, and both testified to the lies that are the basis of their lawsuits. They're saying that they were lies, that the cases were built on these two pillar cases that abortion is built on in America are built on lies. Number one. Number two, and this really troubles me. The whole thing does, but we are now aborting 80 to 90% of the children that are diagnosed as Down syndrome in utero. They get the diagnosis. The system then really pushes that this child be aborted. And we are committing a genocide with Down syndrome children. We're doing it with cystic fibrosis children. We're going to be able to genetic test more children in utero in the future. And this is horrific. This is the impact of Roe and Doe, is you get the genocide of certain classes of children, amongst other impacts, but you get the genocide of classes of children simply because of their genetic test, which many times are wrong to boot. It's awful. It is really despicable.
Well, we're really grateful that you had these hearings. I one of your sentences in your introductory remarks was this. To put it simply, you said, Roe was a mistake, a very, very costly one.
It was. It is. It remains that way. It's impacted us and the rest of the world. If the United States is the moral leader of the world, and if we lose our voice on a topic so important as this one, it has a huge impact negatively around the world.
Senator, in May of 2006, you also held a hearing in the Judiciary Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate on the consequences of legalized assisted suicide and euthanasia. And this is really a primary problem we face today, isn't it?
It really is, and I think you're going to see with the new Democrat Congress that this sort of topic is starting to seep into more places. It's a new front that the people that are opposed to life are opening up, and what we're seeing is that in other countries that have embraced this ethic or lack of ethic, that you should be able to take your own life at any point in time that you decide or choose to, that you start getting a lot of people taunted, pushed, cajoled into taking their own life. And in three-fourths of the cases, they are depressed, and they're really struggling more with depression than the need for assisted suicide. And I am, Frank, really concerned about that particular topic expanding rapidly in this country, as it started to expand in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, I know very recently Congress is taking up the unborn child pain awareness, which is, I believe, something that you yourself introduced, right, Senator?
Yes, it is.
And What was the thinking in, you know, because some people say, well, you know, all abortion is wrong, you know, so why are we going to go after this Child Pain Awareness Act? What do you see as the promise for that?
Well, in some respects, what I see here is this is something that is Roe consistent. It doesn't violate Roe, even though I believe Roe to be fundamentally wrong and clearly not in the Constitution, the right to abortion. But this doesn't even challenge that. This says, okay, Roe is currently by the Supreme Court designated as the law of the land. But it says in this one, if you have a child that's 20 weeks of age or older and are seeking an abortion, this child in utero and you're seeking an abortion, if this child is aborted, this child will feel extraordinary pain, and that you as a mother need to have all the information possible, and you need to know, we require under this, A, that you're informed of the pain that the child will experience, and you are offered anesthesia for the child. You can waive it, but you're offered anesthesia for the child before the abortion. Completely Roe consistent, but also really telling this mother, look, this is what you are physically doing, and don't let somebody mislead you that this is just a blob of tissue and it feels nothing.
Now, you know, Senator, very often, you know, we elect our representatives like yourself and pro-life people, and then very often everyone takes a back seat, you know, till the next election. Now, a bill like this Child Pain Awareness Act, what's the best approach that people could have with, let's say, their senator, whether they're pro-life or maybe they were not going to vote the right way? What's the best way that we can try to influence them?
Well, it's to write and call them. But, you know, one of the things that I would do and urge people to do if they would is members of Congress, senators hold town hall meetings. They travel places listening for input. I would urge people to go to those meetings and raise this issue with them and raise it in a very informed fashion about the science on this. We know that this child feels pain at that point in time, and really just from practical experience. Every mother that's had a child knows that child feels pressure and pushing at that age. But they need to bring it to the awareness of the member. Write them, call them, email them, but the best thing really they can do is to go to town hall meetings and raise the issue personally and directly with them there.
Senator, in our last minute or so of this segment, I recently heard you in one of your speeches talking about the it was prior to the election, but you zeroed in on something that's so important because so many candidates think that they should shy away from speaking the truth because of negative political repercussions. But you said something. You said, we win on the truth. Can you explain what you meant?
It's virtually the words speak for themselves. It is a strange thing, though, in politics that people feel like often people in my position that are running for political office that you can't really speak with clarity or you will offend people. And the votes are to be gained in the middle. It's by not being too much this way or too much that way. And yet, I think that is fundamentally wrong when you're dealing with clear moral issues. Maybe not with every issue, and so I don't think it is with every issue, but when you're dealing with clear moral issues, that's just wrong. And the truth is that this is a life in the womb. And the truth is we should speak of it as a life in the womb. And that we should speak with clarity about this, and we should speak boldly, and there's nothing to be ashamed about being pro-life, and that I want to have a culture of life. And if anything, I think it rallies people, and instead of talking in code words like, well, I'm for family values, or I believe life begins at conception, but then you're not willing to say, well, why do you believe that, and why do you think it's important? This is probably the lead moral issue of our day. It is the lead moral issue of our day. And we should speak with clarity on that, and I think the people will respond. We shouldn't be scared of speaking with clarity on such an important key issue.
Well, we want to thank you for the clarity with which you have spoken and for the action that you've taken on this and so many issues. We really look forward to continuing to work with you, both within and the structures of lawmaking and also with other opportunities to influence public opinion and advance public education. Thank you so much, Senator, for all that you do and for being with us on the program.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Well, Janet, isn't it refreshing to hear those kind of remarks from a U.S. senator?
Yes, so it was not only refreshing, but I think we were so honored just to have that opportunity and how honestly he talked to us and to the audience.
That's right. Well, we'll look forward to more time with Senator Brownback. And thank you, brothers and sisters, for joining us. Spread the word about Senator Brownback. And on our website, you'll find copies of various speeches he has given, some of which we have referred to today in this segment. Stay with us. We'll be going into our action segment next.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
I want to be a fireman when I grow up.
I want to be a teacher.
I want to be president of the United States.
I want to find a cure for cancer.
The choice to have an abortion alters the course of the future. Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Welcome back to our action segment. Janet and I share in this part of the program some practical things that you can do, products and tools you can use to spread the pro-life cause. You'll see more and more young people involved in the right to life struggle across our country. And if you ask them why they fight abortion, they will say, "It could have been me." They're very much aware that Roe versus Wade in 1973 declared them to be non-persons because they were in their mother's wombs after that tragic and mistaken decision. Therefore, deathroe.com has been established. Deathroe.com. Roe versus Wade, causing the death of tens of millions of babies. We tape these programs from the studios of Life Dynamics, and Life Dynamics and Mark Crutcher, the president and founder, have set up this website as a place in the movement for these young survivors to come. To take ownership of their own efforts to advance the cause of life and to find resources from around the country. Janet, this is really taking off nicely now, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because, you know, first of all, the kids are all over the Internet anyway. I mean, that's just a natural thing. They're in chat rooms, they're talking. And on this particular website, there's several opportunities for them. First of all, they themselves can register as a survivor. There's a memorial wall. It's kind of like the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, you know, with people who were killed in the Vietnam War put their names on a wall. Well, these kids, it's an Internet wall, and they could either put a little blurb about themselves, even post their picture up on the memorial wall. But then in addition, there's products, Death Row T-shirts. Then there's a survivor's bracelet, and it has their survivor's number is the date of the passing of Roe v. Wade. And there's other products up there for them. And then also, there's an opportunity to connect with other youth groups around the country that are pro-life youth groups. And so we want to ask church groups right now, do you have a youth group? Obviously, you're pro-life. You're not up there. Go up there and register, because this is a way for more kids to get involved in youth groups, in youth ministry, and as survivors of abortion, to really speak out of why they're pro-life.
You know, I have always said the youth are not the future of the pro-life movement. They are the present
That's
leaders
right.
now, because they're leading their peers. They're leading the rest of society, because they are the ones, because they were declared non-persons, who are now able to provide a voice in the movement where they're literally speaking for themselves. The fact is that they know they are a person today. They were a person yesterday. They were a person the day that they were born, and they were a person in the day before that, too, in the womb, all during their time in the womb.
And this is what Death Row is about.
That's right. You know, especially like the T-shirts, a lot of these schools have in the spring Pro-Life T-shirt Day. Well, maybe they'd like to get one of these new Death Row T-shirts to wear to school on Pro-Life T-shirt Day, or wear it any day to school, for that matter, or go to a church outing or a picnic wearing that T-shirt. It really makes people think about the abortion issue. You know, they might be teaching lessons to the adults in their community who consider themselves somehow, quote, pro-choice still. If these kids are wearing that Death Row T-shirt, it's going to pose conversation. People will say, well, what's that about? Well, there you go. Now's the time to have a pro-life discussion by wearing that T-shirt.
The presence of deathrow.com is not only important as a place for these young survivors to go, but also for all the rest of us to go there too, to understand what has been identified as abortion survivor syndrome, especially if we're interested or are involved in some way in the education of the young, or pastors in churches, youth ministers, in understanding how we can minister to young people. If we're going to minister to or educate the young or lead them to Christ, we cannot ignore the impact of being an abortion survivor. It shifts the entire foundation of their understanding of life, of God, of family, of love. We see survivor syndrome in the anxiety and guilt that they feel for having survived, much like soldiers who come back from battle and have lost their friends in battle. So this is a phenomenon that cannot be ignored, and that's why we're promoting deathrow.com.
Yes. And again, go to that website and get involved, order the product. If you have young people in your own family, encourage them to visit the website. Once they do, they'll be hooked, and they'll be getting all their friends to go there also.
Thanks for all that you do, brothers and sisters, for the cause of life. Continue to join us on Gospel of Life. Tell your friends about our programs. And let's keep each other in prayer as we continue to fight abortion.
The decision to have an abortion not only affects that moment in your life.
Kristen Gordon.
It affects many precious moments to come.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child, so I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help and healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
Friends, as we conclude our program, may I invite you to do four things. First of all, tell other people about Gospel of Life. Tell them when these programs air so that they can tune in and learn more about the pro-life movement. Secondly, we like to hear from you. On our website, gospeloflife.com, you can even send us your prayer requests, and our entire ministry team will be more than happy to lift up your concerns and intentions before the throne of God. Thirdly, we're eager and ready to come to your community, to preach in your churches, to gather with your pro-life groups, and to help inspire you in the pro-life cause. And finally, we ask you to donate so that we can keep these programs on the air. You can send your tax-deductible contributions to us at Gospel of Life Ministries. Again, go to our website, and thank you.